Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Going to Pulver. He's headed back from Cleveland. He will join us at 11:30 or thereabouts to go inside the locker room, etc., with Scott Dockerman, who was there covering the entire weekend, South Carolina and Iowa front and center. However, he will join us at 11:30 as he makes his way back. At 11:50, one of the big name golf writers that's covered the sport for a long time, a guy by the name of Bob Herrig. If you follow golf, I'm assuming at some point you've read some of his stuff. He's with Sports Illustrated. He's got a brand new book, Timing is Everything, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. Bob Herrig will join us on the book, on what's behind it, and a peek inside this year's Masters coming up at 10 minutes before noon. To start hour number two, we will talk baseball, as we'd always do on Monday, with Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com. And then the final, 35 minutes or whatever it is, we're going to leave it wide open. Recap again for the audience that just joins us over the lunch hour, what we saw yesterday, previewing the national championship for the men's tonight. We still have one to go, after all. Purdue and UConn. UConn, about a 7-point, 6.5, 7-point favorite. That game coming up at 8:20 tonight. Trent's plays of the day. Circus Sports sponsor those. So a busy couple of hours ahead of us, and obviously we have to start with a story that will live for a long time in the state, and that was the Iowa women back-to-back Final Fours. Didn't go their way yesterday. South Carolina, there was a reason that they were unbeaten coming into it, and just so damn good. For the first 10 minutes of the game, they go, maybe not 10 minutes, but the first 6 or 7 minutes, holy mackerel, they do have an answer for this team, and they were just, it was tempo, and it was making shots, and then South Carolina had other plans, and away they went. But all in all, just an incredible ride that this team took. Everybody, fans, haters, media alike, everybody was on board and watching it, and the curtain came down yesterday.
It was a disappointing end to an incredible run. Memories of this team will last a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
This was a team that has done unlike anything we've ever seen before in our state.
Yep.
And maybe neither of our lifetimes.
No, it's true.
There has not been a sport that has gone to the level that we have seen, like women's college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
We have not seen this.
Nope.
Golf, stop.
Yep.
Tiger Woods is not the same.
Yep.
The numbers were there.
Right.
They increased.
Yep.
But there was always...
People were watching golf.
Yes.
People weren't watching women's basketball.
Between 7 and 10 million for the final round of the Masters. It was 14 when the first year he won it. It increased.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about the niche
right
that we're talking about here.
Yep.
This was unlike...
You know what was different, though? Back then, Palmer?
Yeah.
Nicklaus?
Right.
Those guys didn't bitch.
Right.
They weren't pissed off at this kid from Stanford who's coming over to...
Uh-huh.
I mean...
Now, there was a Fuzzy Zeller.
Well, sure, that thing, yeah, and he paid a steep price for that,
yes,
too.
Yes, he did.
He was chastised. And,
as he should have.
Absolutely was. But, yeah, we've never seen it. We won't see it, probably. I don't think in our state. There's been some tremendous athletes, female athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sean Johnson.
Right, yes, exactly.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
But we watched the Olympics. We watched the Olympics forever.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't watch women's basketball.
No. And the numbers bear it out.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of what people say, this is a delicate conversation for two white guys, old white guys.
Yeah.
But I continue to hear this and continue to see this. And had a female in my life mention this. Women are nasty to each other.
Yeah. They really are.
And
I guess I didn't realize this.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
This is amazing, uh-huh, astonishing to
it
look
is
from the outside, looking in, and see the negativity. Lynette Woodard,
mm-hmm,
is celebrated,
yeah,
by the University of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Without the University
and
of Iowa.
Said all the right things when
did
she was here.
Everything. Lisa Bluter went out of her way, uh-huh, to celebrate her.
Yeah.
And then to come back with that kind of negativity, yeah, the nastiness that came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues all across the board.
It does. I don't understand it.
It is baffling.
I think it's clearly jealousy because
yes,
they, when they played, when they carried this sport, and they were tremendous players, obviously, for them to be thought of in this light. But it didn't bring eyeballs to televisions.
No.
Don't overthink it, folks. Don't overthink it. There's one reason that people watch this. And there's another, and that's going to, maybe not to the numbers, but you mark my words, watch the WNBA numbers this year. We talked to Mike Palm, 11:30 Friday morning, about the Mandalay Bay being sold out for when the Aces, the back-to-back defending champs, are going to host the Fever. And Palm's talking about the ticket prices, how much it costs on a normal game, how much it to get into, what I don't even know what they call it, the Mandalay Bay Arena is what call it. Within an hour of us getting off the air, it was announced that the venue has been changed. This won't be the last venue that's changed. Nope. To see the last place, godforsaken Indiana Fever. it's going to happen. And will I pay as much attention? Yeah, I think I'll probably in the beginning, and I don't think I'm alone. I think the numbers are going to be there. But we can save that for another day. Let's celebrate. I think we should. The fact that this team made it to back-to-back Final Fours, we're talking about Iowa, right? We're not talking about one McDonald's All-American after another, from a senior down to the freshman class rosters dotted with All-Americans, McDonald's All-Americans. That's not the case. This is Caitlin Clark and a bunch of soon-to-be nurses, school teachers, whatever, not WNBA players. Brianna Stewart, yeah, you won a lot of titles, but look at your roster.
You had a lot of talent.
Yes.
How can they not understand and wrap their minds around
jealousy,
that?
And I think it honestly affects your mind sometimes. I really do.
The one player that screwed it up that actually has probably the best argument in this conversation about being the GOAT is Cheryl Swoops. Mm-hmm. Now, she screwed it up because she said things that were blatantly wrong.
Yeah.
And though she walked it back, not at the level that she needed to.
No. I mean, every point she made, and there was like four of them, I think.
Yeah.
They were all wrong.
Right. And I remember watching Cheryl Swoops. I remember her leading that Texas Tech team. That is very similar to this Iowa team. There wasn't a whole lot around her.
Right.
In comparison to these UConn and South Carolina and these other teams we talk about. The depth of talent that those rosters have. And she was able to do that. That would have been a great argument for her because she's the one.
Yeah.
But in recent history, over the last 25 years, as Geno completely changed the game, and what Tennessee was, and what UConn became, and what we see South Carolina is, Baylor, you're throwing in there some Notre Dame teams. Those teams are just so much deeper, so different. Is Kate Martin going to play in the WNBA?
Of course not.
No. Gabby Marshall's going. No. She already knows. She's not even going to try. She's going to go to physical therapy grad school at North Carolina. That's who she's playing. And we're talking about the top-level players. There's one top 40 player, one other player on this whole roster that even would have been looked at by South Carolina. That's Hannah Stolkin. She's a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one on this roster that even had a glimmer of hope of playing.
She had a good weekend, too. Stolkin had a really good weekend.
She's great.
And she is. And she was going up against, I mean, taller women across the board, whether it be Friday night, certainly last night. My good God, every single rebound, the bench, how deep South Carolina is. Look, it's just remarkable that this team is here for back-to-back years. Now she moves on. How far will she go in the WNBA? I believe she'll lead the league in assists by a long ways because these women that she puts those unbelievable, I can't believe you fitted that ball in here type of pass, they will get finished at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be a missed layup one after another or a fumbled pass. And this isn't a criticism for the rest of the Hawkeye team this year. It's just the truth. She's going to be playing with better athletes. But what a run she took college basketball on. What a run she took the state of Iowa on. Hawkeye fans on. Not the entire state of Iowa, but if you don't have a rooting interest, I think you watched.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you watched. And you were entertained. Entertained with a capital E. It was appointment TV, and I can't wait to see the television number.
I want to, let's go to the game a little bit and talk about the game. And when they got it to four, when they had the opportunity.
In the second half?
In the second half, yeah. In the fourth quarter, they got it to four with 5 minutes to play, and they had a chance. There was a travel on.
Was that a Stolke miss layup, too?
No, it was the Kate Martin when she got into the paint, was looking kind of turnaround, got called for a travel.
And she was, she couldn't believe the call.
And there was another one where a Falter went one on three and had a tip from behind and stolen away.
She was trying to out-one three South Carolina players.
That's not going to happen again.
While you're dribbling the ball.
Yes. Well, we're talking about the athleticism.
Oh,
and they
God.
Are a different level athlete that they had. Yep. That team, They're great. Mm-hmm. And we said it throughout the course of the year, and there were some tough moments for South Carolina. They were far and away the best team. And Iowa had a chance with 5 minutes to go against that team in a night where South Carolina shoots. Where they hit from downtown? I mean, they had some dagger. 8 of 19.
Yeah. 39 to zip bench points. The rebounds, what was it? 50? I don't know.
49-25. Yeah, which I believe was the exact same number it was a year ago.
Was it really?
Or it was either 48-25 or 49-25. Huh. They got out-rebounded. You're going up against a 6'7 girl. It was fun. We had some friends over. My daughter's friend, Aubrey, same age. And in our kitchen, we have this, it's like this board, a measuring board. And the kids, every year at the birthday, we how tall they are at that point. But it goes all the way up to 6'7". And so we were pointing out to them, that's how tall that girl is. And they're just baffled. We had one of our friends, Scott, over. He's a big guy. He's 6'3". Like, yeah, this girl is 4 inches taller than Scott is. And just, they couldn't even wrap their minds around a girl being that tall.
And there's Stulky down there trying to do some damage. And there's O'Grady on the floor and getting out athleted time after time after time. This is a deep team.
Yeah.
Dawn Staley going out of her way. Did you see after the
I
game?
Did.
Staying on the stage. The confetti had fallen. She'd said her piece. She leans over to Holly and says, I got one more thing to say. And I'm, you know, something along those lines. And praise Caitlin Clark for picking up this league, picking up women's basketball and putting it on her back and carrying her. And here's the thing about this, Trent, the pressure she must have been under. She didn't flinch. And if anything, I saw a different side of Caitlin Clark this weekend.
Yes.
A more mature side.
Absolutely.
The stuff that comes with Caitlin Clark that you just, that's part of her. That's what makes her so good. And for a lot of athletes, it is. I didn't see that. Now, I don't know if somebody got to her and realized, you know, that you're about to change after this weekend. You're about to become, you know, obviously a pro, and you're going to be representing a ton of companies. Because I have to believe between now and the draft next Monday night, a week from tonight, there's probably a lot of photo shoots or, you know, commercial opportunities that are penciled in between now and then. But what a run. What an amazing run. Will we see it again in this state? I don't know. I really don't. I hadn't seen it. I'll have to defer to, you know, people that grew up here, to what would be close to this. But, man, I don't know.
This was generational. And can Iowa build themselves back up? I mean, this transition this year is going to be important. They have to find a point guard.
Yeah.
They don't have a point guard.
Yep.
They have to find that piece. And last week, was it Ike Holt that mentioned to us that there is a point guard that they've been in contact with? So some
in
potential
fact,
there.
In fact, I think he thought it was almost a done deal.
Right. It definitely sounds like it's trending that direction. And you need that because you cannot afford for the Iowa women's basketball program to take a monster step back. You have to, at minimum, be a tournament team next year.
Right.
To keep the momentum, keep the recruiting going, all those different things. And I think they can with the right point guard. I think the pieces are there. You know, do you go into next season with O'Grady and Stulky playing together? You go more traditional that season because, again, you don't have Caitlin Clark. So you go that direction. We definitely saw enough from Emma Folter. She can be a star. I mean, she has that kind of capability. She can do those kind of things.
Yeah, she's really good.
We know that McCabe's a great shooter, and maybe that's just all that she is, but that's fine. You put a great shooter out there with the way they run offensively, and then a couple other. Fearbox got to be better. You know, it's got to be better with the handle. That's one thing definitely needs to increase. She has the athleticism. Got to be better there. The pieces are there to at least be a tournament team, but there's also going to be a whole lot of teams that are going to be circling Iowa next year. And those 30 and 40-point losses that they've handled the last couple of years in the Big Ten, they're going to be ready for Iowa, too.
Your turn's coming.
Yes.
Your turn's coming. We'll see how it goes. We'll see, I mean, how many season tickets will Iowa sell during this offseason leading up to next year. All remains to be seen, right? We know what it was this year. There's going to be a drop-off. I don't think anybody's kidding themselves to think that there won't be. How significant is it going to be? I think that bears watching. But what a run that she took everybody on, and sad it's over, but boy, oh boy, this will be thought about for a long, long time.
Another piece of the weekend, obviously, we didn't have an opportunity to react to here on the radio airwaves, and that was Friday night, the win against UConn, and the moving screen heard across the world.
Trent, there are offensive line coaches that are searching out that tape. Because what an incredible movement that we saw on display. Was it Edwards?
Yes.
The footwork is impeccable. There's left tackles out there that should be studying exactly the technique that we saw out of her. I don't see how you watch this and think that that's a bad call. Scott Van Pelt, not good.
No.
Having the two...
ESPN was a terrible look for them.
It was bad. Yes. It was really bad. Particularly when you couple it with having two UConn stars on with you to bitch and to whine, and and their team just had gotten beat. I get it on one hand. I mean, who else are you going to get?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going to find someone that played for UConn. People who... look, I'd heard of these two people. Right. If I've heard of you in women's basketball, you must do something right, because I didn't care about the sport until last January. Not this one, the one before.
Yeah.
But it was a bad look. It was a terrible look. And then for people to watch that and still have that today?
What ESPN got so wrong is they continued to show that tight screenshot from behind, the play from behind. And that's the camera angle that... It doesn't look egregious.
Well, you're right.
From that angle, it absolutely. And that was the one that they showed right away on the replay, and was watching the game with some friends and said, "Ooh, we got one there."
Yeah.
If we, right. Iowa got away with one on that one. And then you see, both in live and slow-mo, it's not close. There is not an argument that can be made. And I understand. And there is a ton of people that say late game. And I get this. You want to have the
Becker,
players.
What if it wasn't called and Beckers hits the shot?
Late game situations, players decide it. Well, Gabby Marshall did everything right.
Right.
She wanted to decide the game by playing great defense, and that's what she did. She played great defense. Mm-hmm. That is a player trying to decide the game, and an illegal screen wiped her out.
Right.
That is players deciding the game. And doing something illegal cannot combat that. I understand. It's a little bit different in the final seconds. That was egregious. That wasn't close. That is not the time to make that argument.
You don't swallow your whistle at that point. Trent, I'm not kidding when I say that left tackles should be using this film. It is perfect.
It was beautiful.
It was a great slide. Mm-hmm. She's in great position, but it's an illegal screen all day long, every single second of those 40 minutes at any time.
And to think that UConn was going to make the shot.
Well, that's just it. Now, this Becker, she's got a big... It might have fallen, but she still had to make it.
Stolke was right there. It was going to be a contested three against a 6'2" girl with some athleticism. Or she was going to try to go in. The other thing, Iowa had a foul to give. And they had talked about that coming out of the timeout.
I didn't remember that part of it.
Iowa had a foul to give. I believe that Stolke would have fouled her if that turn would have happened and she started going to the rim, because they had a foul to give. All these things... There's no automatic that UConn is going to make that bucket and win that game.
Right.
And yet, the people that took it to that level, it was an awful look. I love Scott Van Pelt. He is one of my favorite broadcasters. Yeah. I respect him. I enjoy most every take that he had, not only to be wrong, but to be incendiary. I mean, he was the negativity that surrounded Friday night, which should have been such a great moment.
Yeah.
To hear Gabby Marshall say that she had to delete social media during the press conference on Saturday. She didn't make the call. What is wrong with people?
I know.
Was it a flop?
No.
She got drilled by a 6'2 girl that she's given up 75, 80 pounds to.
Right.
You go run to a girl or a guy,
80
pounds more, bigger than you. See what happens to you. Mm-hmm. You're running full speed.
It was like it was like a DB trying on coming in on a blitz, and a left tackle picked it up. Here's the thing, though. And I agree with everything you said. But you know what was, I'll take this and spin it into a positive. We spent the next 24 hours bitching about a call in women's basketball.
Yes. Yeah.
And I kept reading how the sport is rigged.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking about women's basketball weekend long. Would we have been talking about the UConn-Iowa finish on Saturday? Meh. To an extent, but not to the extent that the country was because of a play in the game. So if you want to make it positive out of it, maybe that would be it. But I agree with you. Becker still had to make the shot. She finished 3-for-8 from behind the three-point line. If you want anybody on UConn to have the ball in their hand to attempt that shot, of course it would be her. But you know what? It overshadowed Mule's performance.
Yes.
Because Mule did was unbelievable on Caitlin Clark.
Stud.
Oh, my God.
She was awesome.
And when she was, and when she had an opportunity to shoot the ball, I think she shot 50%, made 50% of her threes. That was amazing.
She was one of the few non-McDonald's All-Americans on that UConn
team. Oh, she's not one? I didn't know that.
Well, she played professionally in Croatia for 3 years.
That would do it.
UConn got her eligible. How did that happen? Yeah.
Look, oh, man. This Iowa team 2 weeks ago knocked off Kim Mulkey and Angel Reese. Then they knocked off Gino Auriemma and Paige Beckers, and came up against an unbeaten team that was just better than them, just better than anybody all year long. It was a hell of a run.
It was.
You beat Kim Mulkey. You beat Auriemma back to back games. the bracket that they had, the bracket of doom, as it was called when it came out. How unfair is this to Iowa having to go through the path that they did? Well, they got there and they made it back to back championship years. I don't see how you can minimize this. I really and truly don't. People will. I get it. It's the right. They're fans. That's what moves the needle and makes our world go round, and more power to you.
One more for you. This one popped into my head. I see there was a 30 for 30 on it. It reminded me of one of my favorite 30 for 30s on the Fab Five. When you think of the Fab Five, what do you think about?
The timeout.
That, absolutely.
The shorts.
Yes. But changing basketball.
Yeah, for sure. They did.
They definitely changed. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the shoes, the black shoes and socks and all those things. They were cool.
Yeah.
That's how this Iowa team is going to be remembered.
That's true.
Because Michigan got to the championship game twice. Lost both times.
Yeah.
But that's not your first memory. That's not the lasting legacy of what they are. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the lasting legacy of Caitlin Clark and this Iowa team. When people think about her, they're not going to think two championship game losses. Yeah. There's going to be a lot more positives that's going to come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it stings and it hurts. And with a play here and a shot there and a close out there, maybe you could have knocked off that behemoth that was South Carolina. But that's not going to be the lasting legacy.
No, it wasn't. Hell of a first 10 minutes. I mean, to take the lead in the fashion that they did. And Caitlin comes out. She's making her shots early. And she's distributing the basketball. And you're thinking, wow, maybe there's a chance that this team is going to be able to hang with them. Wasn't the case. But tip of the cap for sure to Dawn Staley and her South Carolina squad. That was unbelievable. Jeff's been very patient. Thought we'd hear from him on this Monday morning, and here he is. How are you? What was your takeaway?
Well, real quick, let's go back to the Connecticut game. You know, people can bitch and moan how they want about the screen, but let's not forget about that the best player ever in college basketball missed a free throw. And Connecticut didn't have the presence of mind to box out with a timeout in their back pocket to extend the basketball with probably 3 seconds to go. So I don't want to, I mean, I'm tired of hearing people about bitching about the call. Get a rebound. And heads up to Sidney Falter. Again, presence of mind to get a rebound, lock it up, and you know, prevail with that victory. And another heads up play with Caitlin with going off
inbounding the ball,
you know, back of the leg.
Yeah.
Another heads up play by the best player ever in college basketball, in my opinion. Let's move on to yesterday. 18 points with Caitlin, the most points in a quarter in, I believe, just the finals history, maybe in the tournament history. I'm not
tournament
sure
history.
On that.
Yep.
I can't remember how that went. Tournament history, 18 points, and the way they came out firing, hitting shots. Again, something that I hope none of us forget, just the style of play and how fun that was. Dawn Staley, got to give it up with the corrections and the adjustments were made.
Mm-hmm.
You guys touched base on it. I don't want to hear Dawn Staley or other people talking about, oh, how hard this season was. Had 7 McDonald's All-Americans on your team.
Yeah,
you lost 5 starters. But I don't, the pompous of the crying and all of this, you guys were 36-0 and oh, yeah, you were a 6.5-point favorite. This wasn't like this was some Cinderella story here.
Right.
And when you look at Iowa's roster, I mean, again, that's hilarious to me. But let's go back into the game. I loved how Iowa gave them that knockout punch early to kind of put doubt in South Carolina's mind. And they came back, fought hard. I thought one of the biggest takeaways, Caitlin being, I don't know what she was thinking there at the end of the second quarter.
First half,
to go into halftime.
Yep.
That really took my heart and stomped up. And I knew as a coach and just watching the game how big that was. You to play lights out basketball and to go into halftime down, I knew that was going to be hard to overcome, which in the third quarter they did. They came out, they fought hard to get back in that game, but sooner or later, getting killed on the glass, second chance points, bench points, sooner or later, you're just going to run out of gas. And again, you guys have touched on it, and I've touched on it for 4 years, guys. I've been calling in, talking about Caitlin Clark when she was a freshman, watching her at Dowling when nobody was watching her. Guys, she freshman, sophomore, junior season year, Trent was there. Nobody came to watch her.
No.
That's dead serious. No one did. And to watch her overcome all the things that she overcame coming into Iowa and watching her grow and to see her, like you guys said, not panic against Connecticut, not panic against South Carolina. Be a great teammate. Learn from her mistakes. And for these people in the media to say, well, she never won a national title, she can't be a GOAT. are you that? Do you know the game of basketball? Have you watched sports? Like, that is ludicrous for those takes to be out there. What did she do for the sport? The eyeballs that she brought to the sport, the money that has came into the sport. It's ludicrous for people to say that. And I'm just so blessed to have her in our state to watch her for the last 8 years or so. It's been remarkable. I can't wait to see what Coach Bluder and the staff does, hopefully to take this program to great heights. And again, for those people, I hope they call in because you sound idiot. You sound so dumb. For those people that think that she's not going to change the WNBA, the eyeballs aren't going to be there, and she's not going to just keep growing the sport, you guys need to wake up and watch the game of basketball. You guys have a good day.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate the call. We'll take a break. Scott Dockerman, more on this coming up. As Doc's making his way back from Cleveland, he will join us. Bob Herrig, longtime golf writer, coming up here at about 11:50. Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Hi, Miller and Condon. Welcome back. It's Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. In about 15 minutes, Bob Herrig from Sports Illustrated on his new book, Masters Week. We will talk to Bob Herrig coming up here in 15 minutes. Right now, Scott Dockerman making his way back from Cleveland. Doc Trend Ken, thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm entering northern Indiana, and it's a beautiful day.
Absolutely. Well, we got to obviously start with yesterday. I want to start at the end, though. In the locker room afterwards, we saw Gabby Marshall in tears. There's kind of obviously mixed emotions from the players knowing it had ended and the way that it ended, the disappointment, etc. What was the locker room like, Doc, after media was allowed in?
I think, you know, first of all, you had Tate Martin and Caitlin Clark who were at a dais, and they weren't really in the locker room. And the locker room itself was, yeah, pretty somber, as you'd expect. I think you look at Gabby, I talked to her, and she was in tears. Cynthia Falter and several of them were. And I just think, but there was a different vibe than maybe you would expect. I mean, there wasn't really frustration that I think people might think, you know, for losing a game like that. I think it was more they did the best they could, and they were, you know, they were beaten by a better team, but they're more sad that I think that, you know, the season's over, and wonderful era of Iowa women's basketball is now over. I think that's probably what caught, you know, and Gabby Marshall played her last game. She's not going to play, you know, in Europe or anything like that. So I think that's probably the underlying emotional sentiment that I got out of some of these players.
Doc, your post-game article up at The Athletic, you talked a lot about the legacy of Iowa and about Caitlin Clark. Take us a little bit down that path here. It's difficult to verbalize. It's difficult to write about because we still don't know the full impact of it, but we've lived it here over these last few years and just the immense popularity of the sport and the way that it's grown. What did you come up with as you went through the legacy of Caitlin Clark in Iowa?
I think you know. I think in some ways they're together, in some ways they're separate. And let's take Caitlin separately. I mean, you know, right now she's in the discussion as the greatest player of all time. Statistically, she is. I think there's a movement of goalposts that seemingly comes up every time that she accomplishes a goal. And therefore, oh no, but you've got to do this. You've got to do this. Oh yeah, but there was this woman who played, you know, 50 years ago in this small school that scored 4,000 points, so therefore you don't have the real record, or, oh, you need to win a championship before you can be considered a GOAT. I mean, you know, all of that aside, I mean, Caitlin Clark energized millions of people, millions of fans, you know, thousands and thousands of girls who are in their teens who now see somebody like them from the suburbs, you know, from, you know, West Des Moines, Iowa, went to a Catholic school, who became the greatest player in the country and the most popular player in the country, you know, who led off Saturday Night Live. That is a part of her legacy, that she just brought women's basketball to the mainstream. And I think that's something you cannot, that's profound, and it will be ongoing. I think when you look at the legacy of Iowa women's basketball team this year, probably combining in the last couple of years. I think it's about the joy that they brought.
Yep.
A state, a fan base, and people who just like to watch them play. I mean, the T-shirts are so apparent. That, to me, tells me a lot that the fans wanted to just revel in this team, whether it's Gabby Marshall, Grit Like Gabby, Happy Like Hannah, Molly Davis in her headband, Kate Martin the glue. I mean, they're like, it's almost like it's a small town, and they went to state 2 years in a row, and the whole town shuts down, and they're like women who used to be in your neighborhood, or they used to babysit your school. People call them by their first names, and I think that the legacy is just the joy that they brought, the happiness, the togetherness, and I think that's something that's hard to touch on, but I think it's also extraordinary because you can't put a price on that.
No, I think that's well said, Doc. Did you notice a different Caitlin Clark this weekend? What I mean by certainly not skill-wise, that's obviously apparent. But some of the other stuff that comes with being Caitlin Clark, the player, right? The fact that she is so tightly wound. Saw a smile on her face. She said a couple of weeks ago that maybe I should smile more after she was criticized for, you know, some of the histrionics. I saw I don't know if she's maturing before our eyes or it was this weekend, knowing the stage she was about to step onto. But I thought I noticed a difference, Doc. How about you?
You know, it's different. I think, you know, she had still so many different events she had to accept the AP National Player of the Year, several different awards, but also the way she played. I think she played more relaxed. I think maybe getting to the Final Four again, you know, applied so much pressure on her, and she's been under a microscope that we've never seen before for a collegiate athlete, and certainly not a female one. And to have to go through what she did the whole entire year, but this is the one time where it was kind of like, once they got past LSU, it was like, you know, this is gravy. This is fun. This is basketball. This is just, you know, yeah, there's these events I need to go to, but it's not just about me necessarily. Now, of course, she was the fan of the most spotlight, but I think overall it was just more about basketball. And probably yesterday, I would say, you know, you saw a combination of emotions for her, but I think one of them that maybe came out to me a little bit was relief.
Okay.
And, you know, and it's not, believe me, she's the ultimate Hawkeye. She's on a Mount Rushmore of one in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, wow, this was an incredible stress on her for such a long time. And even though it's over and she's going to miss every part of it, it's kind of like an exhale. This is a chance to kind of decompress for a whole week until she gets drafted number one in the WNBA draft.
For a whole week, yeah.
A whole week. Not a whole lot of time to decompress, and I'm going to guess there's going to be a few phone calls from agents and marketing people and a lot to get set up on that front. Doc, from there, you are not a Caitlin Clark beat writer. You are a University of Iowa beat writer. And looking at the future of this program, taking this momentum that they have been able to build over the last 4 years, and even going back to Megan Gustafson, you know, Lisa Bluter for a long time, she couldn't win the big one, couldn't get to the second weekend, and now it is here. What needs to happen to continue the momentum, and what is the likelihood that Iowa, maybe not a South Carolina or a UConn, but a consistent winner, a team that you're thinking about, Sweet 16s and Elite Eights on a yearly basis, what's it going to take to keep this program at that kind of level?
It's going to take great players. I mean, I think if anything, what this weekend reinforced, and it continues to every single year, is you need great players to win championships, even to get to the Final Four. And I remember, you know, on Friday night, I was courtside, and I was watching UConn and Iowa, and outside of Caitlin Clark and maybe Hannah Stolte, you're watching kind of the difference between five stars and three stars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like Iowa football was playing Alabama. You just have that difference. That doesn't mean they couldn't make up for it. They did, and, you know, developed them. But you do have to start at a certain level. Now, the one thing with Cass coming in, she's got five newcomers, Lisa does, and four of them are in the top 100 for prospects. That's a huge start. And then you look at the next year where you've got a commitment from Addison Deal, who already is getting T-shirts for in Iowa City, and she's, you know, a top, what, 10, top 12 prospect as well. And that's what this can do for a program like Iowa, to take it to not the next level, but maintain it at a very, very high level and get those types of players in. Because as you said, Trent, you know, I do remember it, in some ways it parallels the current situation with men's basketball, that it was just, you know, a lot of great kids, good players, but, and we got to the tournament every year, but, you know, the Sweet 16 seemed like the ceiling. Now the ceiling is national championship, because against any other team, they would have won it last yesterday. But you play a team with that much depth, that much talent at every position, line changes, that even, you know, one small injury like Molly Davis, you know, strips their depth, and they really, it's hard. You just can't play a better game than they did. And yet that still wasn't good enough.
Scott Docterman from The Athletic. Doc, we will let you continue your journey. We'll grab you next Monday, Doc, if your schedule allows. Thanks for giving us a few minutes as you make your way back from Cleveland. Thank you, Scott Docterman.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Scott Docterman, as we check in with our buddy from The Athletic, is he covered the game yesterday. Just real quick, this probably is this is a me thing. I get it, but it bothered me yesterday following the game. Alea Boston, who's part of the pregame, the halftime, it bothered me. She was in the celebration immediately following. I mean, this was before the confetti even started to fall.
Right.
She was running off the set in her, you know, Sunday best. Come on. If you want to be a fan, be a fan.
Right.
If you want to work in the media, be in the media. Don't go in. I know she played there last year.
Yeah.
She played there. I get it.
And that's why it didn't bother me as much.
It bothered the hell out of me.
It was a year ago. She's 23.
Yeah, but so don't join the media till you got the fandom out of you.
Because she's been so great, and maybe that's
the
reason
good.
For it. Yeah,
yes.
she's excellent.
Right.
And maybe that's why I gave her a little more grace on that one. It was emotional. That was a team that...
Cry on the set.
Yeah.
I mean, the UConn gals would have been crying on the set. I would like to believe that they wouldn't have joined the celebration, huh? But that just, come on.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to push back a ton on you. Yeah, I get you. Right. And you're very much not a wee guy.
I am, and I'm an old school, you know, I'm an old man yelling at a cloud, I get it. And I'm in the minority because not very many people had that problem, but I did. And that it's just a bad look.
It was.
Maybe it was a bad look compounded on everything we heard on Friday. For me, because it took away, I thought that the broadcast was, the Lobo was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Rococo. Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
He's really talented. Him and Lobo, I thought, were a great team. I love the L. Duncan and the rest of the group.
Yes.
Breaking down the game. Really well done. I think that they really emerged this weekend and, you know, going forward now. I'm assuming that they'll be part of it. I just didn't like to see that. I thought it took away from what was a really good weekend for those, for their career and for ESPN, but rubbed me the wrong way.
Anyway. I know you're not alone. There's plenty of people that had that same thought, maybe just because I like Boston so much, and her and Caitlin will be teammates.
They certainly
in a week.
How did that happen? That, I mean, dude, they must have stunk. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. All right, Bob Herrig has a new book out, Lasting Legacy. The book is called Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. Bob will join us on the book and on the Masters. Matt Rudy will come on with us on Wednesday, our normal golf guy. I look forward to catching up with Rudy. I look forward to talking golf when we come back. It's Miller and Condon. We're on Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. And welcome back to Des Moines Sports Station. Dusted this off. One out of the 52 weeks of the year, we play this intro.
Yes.
What an intro it is. Miller and Condon is Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. We're joined by Bob Herrig, longtime golf writer. Sports Illustrated, his latest book is Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. Go looking back 5 years ago to what was, and it may be his last major victory. I hope there's one or two more in there, but he's getting a little long in the tooth. Bob Herrig, Trent Condon. It's my partner. My name is Ken Miller. Thank you for coming on. Congratulations on the book. How are you, Bob?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
No, appreciate it as well. Look forward to leafing through the book when things slow down here after this week, which it's about to. But so what was behind it? Obviously, going back 5 years, 2019, just remarkable, and it's not lost on anybody. You know, Tiger and his dad, and then Tiger and his son. You know, as we come full circle type of moment. But was that really where it popped into your mind that this is where you wanted to start writing your next book?
No question. I mean, I thought that victory was, you know, you could argue it's the best of all of his wins because he wasn't the same player in 2019 that he was in 2008, 2009, even 2012. I mean, he had been greatly diminished by injury, and what he went through with the back surgery was I thought, a pretty good reason to dive into that. And as I got into it, though, I started to realize that, you know, really that's sort of Tiger's legacy. That's what he's done throughout his career. It's the talent and the skill, obviously, was going to get him a lot of wins. But without the drive, hence the title of the book, or the resiliency or the never quit attitude, I'm not sure he would have got to as many as he got, because he just has this sort of inner will that I think most people don't have. You know, there's a human nature aspect to all of us that allows us to sort of justify, you know, not doing that extra push-up or, you know, whatever in our business, you know, maybe not doing that extra interview. Not doing, you know, whatever it is. And Tiger never cut corners. You know, back then he always did extra. And I think that served him well. And I've got numerous examples of that in the book.
Bob, when I think of, well, exactly what it is, the lasting legacy, we talk about golf and, you know, just the TV numbers and the viewership and the attendance and all those things and the amount of money that everybody, not just Tiger Woods, made in the game of golf. But it's also the what-if game, a whole lot of that. Do you get into that at all, the what-if, the injuries, the off-the-course kind of drama that went along with it? How much of that is in the book?
Yeah, there's a lot of that in there. I mean, obviously, you wonder, you know, Tiger missed a lot of opportunities in what many might consider the prime of his career. You know, when the scandal occurred in, like, 2010 timeframe, he was, what, about 34 at that time, 35? You know, he was 33 even. He still had a lot of great golf ahead of him, and that set him back. You know, there's just no question about it. He had a great 2009. He probably should have won the PGA. He won seven times worldwide. And then after that, everything hit. He didn't win again until 2012. So 2010 was a year in which the majors went to Pebble Beach and St. Andrews, where he had won before. And his game wasn't the same. He wasn't the same that year. You know, he had a good, solid comeback in 12 and 13, and then he started getting hurt. You know, and over the past 10 years, you know, going back to 10 years ago right now, he missed the Masters in 2014 due to the first back surgery, the microdiscectomy. He missed two majors in 14. He missed all four in 16. He missed all four in 17. You know, he played them all in 18 and 19, which is remarkable, and obviously won one of them. And then now, of course, you know, he had the car crash, which has really limited him here in the last 3 years.
When you say limited, is it limited, because I have to think this week, right? I don't know. I just saw X had a video of him actually out on the range as we speak, which was current. But the challenge for him, A, the rest of the field, obviously, but just walking the course, how difficult is that, is Augusta for Tiger physically?
Well, it's the hardest walk in golf if you don't have any issues with your legs, you know? It's very hilly. It's a tiring walk. And look, let's be honest, the legs are part of the golf swing. People forget that. You know, when you get tired, and your legs don't operate as well, you're swinging more with your arms, and so you're not going to hit the ball the same. It's what guys fight in playing this tournament. Tiger was always great at that. Well, now he's got the whole issue with the right leg. and that makes that exasperates it. So, you know, he looks to be walking around pretty well, actually. I thought that earlier this year when I saw him at Riviera in L.A. And last December in the Bahamas when he came back, he was walking fine. You know, I mean, it's fine, relatively speaking. And he was even confident about it. He had had an ankle surgery that really alleviated some issues. But it's still a big ask, you know. And how much has he been able to walk at home? In order to be prepared, you can't just hit balls. You've got to go through the process of hitting a drive, you know, walking 300 yards down the fairway, hitting the next shot, standing around for hours. You know, how much has he been able to do that? He probably doesn't do it a lot because he doesn't want to overdo it. But then you wonder, well, is he prepared? And that's why the whole issue of him not playing here since February, you know, is a concern.
Bob, you talk about the drive and what is in there. And maybe not for this year or the here and now, but is there a run in him? You know, we've seen some guys late in the career really put it all together.
Boy, I hope so.
Ernie Els, you know, had a nice run at the late. We saw Tom Watson at the British Open one year in his late 50s. You know, do you see maybe not here, but maybe in 5 years, that health finally is going to an impact that he can put together another solid 2-3-4 year stretch?
The problem with that is he'll be in his early 50s. Mm-hmm. You know, and just history doesn't suggest that that's very likely. Now, I did have a part in the book where I surmised that you wonder if when he turns 50, look, 10 years ago, we would have laughed at this about the idea of him
playing
the Champions Tour.
Yep.
But Tiger has hinted at it a couple times. He's joked about getting a buggy, you know, meaning a cart. And I actually think that there's some validity in that could help him. Because if he could play some senior golf and ride a cart, he takes the wear and tear off of his leg and his back, but he can be competitive. He can get the juices flowing. He can play in tournaments where he's going to get nervous and hit the shots under pressure. And then if he shows up at the Masters or the British Open, he'll at least have had some reps under the gun. And so, you know, I don't put it past him. You know, but the big question is, and what we don't know is there still room for improvement for him physically? Because I do think he needs to improve from where he is or where he's been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his back's got to not be bothering him. He's got to be able to get to the point where he can walk more so that he can practice more and be more prepared.
Bob Herrig is the author. The book is The Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. And, you know, just thinking out loud, the principal charity class would be a great lead into the U.S. Open. We'd love to have him here in Des Moines. Hey, Bob, congratulations on the book. Look forward to it. Well done. Enjoy Masters Week. It's a special week on the sports calendar. Thank you, Bob Herrig. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, etc., for The Drive with Bob Herrig. We'll take a timeout, come back, hour number two, talk some baseball, Matt Snyder. And then we're going to preview tonight's game. Yes, there is still a championship game tonight.
They're going to play that thing,
they
huh?
are. All they right. are. Purdue and UConn, we'll get into that at 12:30 or thereabouts.
We have the top two teams in college hoops.
Yeah.
We didn't even touch on it in hour one.
Crazy. How times have changed. Hour two next, 106.3 KXNO.